coming to you from the city where donkeys are not allowed to sleep in bathtubs. It's Ventriloquism Weekly. Who writes this copy? Hey guys, Matt Bailey here with a truly unique guest on this Monday. Niels Dunker is a juggler from the Netherlands. He has been performing since a very young age and has gone on to win several awards, including breaking three, not one, not two, but three world records. He even broke one at CAX 2015, which was where I had the pleasure of first meeting Niels. Dunker gave an incredibly energetic performance at the CAX Gala, and I knew I had to have him on the show. In fact, he was so eager to do it, once I said something to him, he reached out to me and said, "Hey, if we're going to do this, we got to do it ASAP, because I leave the country in like 3 days. That's how busy this young man is. So we found a time and we did it, and I'm so excited for you guys to get to hear it right now, because he speaks of passion, of art, and of the incredible journey he's had. Here now, our interview with Niels Dunker. Niels Dunker, welcome to Ventriloquism Weekly. How are you today, sir?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Now tell everybody where you are. I don't think we've ever had anybody from your country on this show.
Right now, I'm in Las Vegas in the United States, but I'm from the Netherlands.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I love it. We're really going international. So how does somebody from the Netherlands get into juggling?
Probably the same as somebody in the United States or everywhere. probably also... Yeah, they sound like magic, juggling, ventriloquism. As a kid, you see it, you like it, you try it.
Yeah.
And then you recognize how much fun it is and you keep going.
Oh, yes. So when were you bit by the bug with it?
I started when I was 12 years old, but I remember a couple years prior to that. I really liked it. I saw it on television. And also my father took me to the Rotterdam Street Performing Festival every year. And I just loved the juggling. I loved the street performers. So when I was 8, I tried it, but I didn't have any books. No mentor, no videotapes. So I didn't know how to progress beyond two-ball juggling. So after 2 days, I mastered that trick. I couldn't come up with any new stuff. So then I quit. But when I was 12 years old, one of my friends, his father, he was a hobby juggler. And he could teach me how to juggle three balls.
That's awesome. So where were some, I know you work all over the world now. You're in Las Vegas now, and I'm sure you'll be somewhere else tomorrow and then somewhere else the next day. But where were some of those first shows?
The very first one was actually a barbecue, like a couple blocks down from where I lived. One of my neighbors, he saw that I was practicing in the local playground. And he said, like, hey, I have a barbecue. You do juggling. You mind coming down and do a little show for us? How much do you charge? And I was like, I don't know how much you charge. And then I thought, okay, well, my friends, they get like $3 per hour at working at the local supermarket, just filling stocks. I was like, okay, for me to do the show probably takes me an hour to get there. Set up all the stuff, do the show, get back. So it's like, I think I charged him like $8. And then at the end, I got 10. So I thought, oh, the show is even more than I charged for. So, you know, it must be good. And then from that gig, one of the people that were in the audience said, like, we have a coloring contest at the local kids' hospital. You mind coming down and present a little show during the, you know, give the prize to the kid that has the best coloring? So I did that, did a little balloon sculpting that day for the kids as well, like on the beds.
Okay.
And from there, I got another gig, and you know, and it's like, hey, it's cool. So I got some business cards, and then later joined the kids circus in Rotterdam, and there I met a friend, so we teamed up, so we started doing street shows, and it was pretty cool. At one point, we knew like at I knew like if I started at 1:30, mm-hmm. between 1:30 and 3:15 in one shopping street in Rotterdam, I could make like $30.
That's
so it's
awesome.
Like, okay, that's more money than, you know, working at a supermarket. Plus, I was like, at one point, I knew, like, if I come a little late, it just costs me money. If I'm in that spot, that's when I nail my $30.
That's awesome. So when did go from street performing to working corporate gigs and working cruise ships? How did you make that leap?
Yeah, the cruise ships took me over 10 years. But, yeah, from the first little street shows, then with my friends... Then we got a little website together, and then just people found that website. So we got a couple, yeah, small corporate gigs, just rock around stuff, just to get into it. And from there, it kind of grew and grew. And then I remember that I really wanted to Yeah, I always think, and I still think, I saw these different layers that I progress in my career. So first you want to learn how to juggle. Then at one point you need to learn how to sell the act. And then we did roving stuff. So it's like, okay, the next step up, what's got to be? Just not walking around. We need to have a structure in the set. So we need to make a show. So then, okay, then I did it on the street. Then you need a beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. But at least I had a show. So, and then it's like, okay, instead of just people walking by, wouldn't it be better if people just expect us and come to see the show? And then at corporate events, it's only the event planner that expects it, and then just throw it to the attendees of the events. But then with the cruise ships, they at least they announce the show. It's in a theater. It's indoors. It's actually one of the best gigs at the moment. And then I was like, okay, but still those people, you know, on vacation, and they really like the show, but it's the cruise line that presents it to them. So then last year, I did my own theater show in Amsterdam. It was awesome because people bought the ticket. They really choose to be there. I had an indoor show. I controlled everything. So I always think of the different levels of, that you need to bring into the show to make it work. So for me, for the next one is now with the corporate events. I did them for many years. I still do them. And I want to expand on them as well. Because then I still can do all the show, the comedy, and the juggling. But then at one point, as an informational speaker, then you need to put content into your presentation as well. So that's going to go even one level deeper than just the comedy and the juggling.
They need to put what in your presentation? I'm sorry?
A corporate message.
Oh, message. Awesome. Yeah, you hit on something there as you were going through about structuring it for the theater and structuring it as a show rather than just here I am juggling and doing this. How do you? What's the thought process? What are you thinking about when you do that? How does somebody structure a juggling show?
For me, it's interesting because there are no books on how to structure a juggling show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, what's the closest thing? And that's, to me, I thought it's magic. So then I started reading all the books because you got Foundations from Abert Riese, you got Showmanship for Magicians, all those books. So I started reading all those books. And every time when I read the word magic, just my brain, you know, converted right to juggling. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, does it make even sense to juggling? And sometimes not. But most of the time, yes, you can use that message, the information in those books, and present it into a juggling act. And actually, I think it's good because not many jugglers that I know, that I'm aware of, have ever done that. So then at one point, the structure of the show becomes kind of like the structure of a magic show.
Yeah.
But it's good because then you're like, you have a unique angle that set me apart from all the other jugglers.
Yeah.
And that's good.
And that's smart. Cross-discipline study. That's smart. Why do you think I see so many entertainers afraid to like step on other people's turf by studying what they're doing. Why do you think we're afraid to look into what other people are doing and learn from other performers, other types of performers, I should say?
Well, I think you have to reach out of your comfort zone, and that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier if, for example, if you go to the, for me to go to the juggling club or, you know, hang out with other ventriloquists and just do what they like.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the big success, like I'm sure Jeff Dunham has a couple comedy writers.
Yeah.
Terry Fader has writers for a show. But it's reaching out of your comfort zone. It's easier to ask your buddy from the magic club. It's like, hey, what do you think about it? And you go, oh yeah, the slides are so good. It's awesome. But then maybe that's one angle to look at it. And it's probably not the angle that a professional should be looking at it. Because mm-hmm. the normal audience, they look at different stuff than, you know, we magic nuts, we juggling nerds. We look at different stuff than the general audience. So it's better to get an outside view, but you have to reach out of your comfort zone, and that's scary. So that's probably why not everybody does it. And also, yeah, those people, you know, for the books are pretty cheap, but still you have to buy them. So you have to invest in that. When you go to consultants to help you with your show, you need to pay them like mm-hmm. a professional rate. And that's also, that could put some people off as well.
Yeah, and you talk about going outside your comfort zone. Have you ever experienced situations where it was intimidating to say, I'm a juggler? Because I know I've, and I don't mean that always juggling is, I don't, on this show, we don't rate juggling, magic, ventriloquism. I mean that I've experienced it as a ventriloquist, I've experienced it as a magician. Are there those situations where you want to get booked, you want to put your name out there, but it's like, I'm a juggler, and you're worried about how it's going to be received?
Not anymore. I think I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
To do the juggling.
Absolutely.
And I think it's an undiscovered gem for those people. If they don't know it, if they knew what it was and the impact could be,
yeah,
they're going to love it. So it's just, instead of like being ashamed for it, I think it's, I just more like feel like, oh, it's such a bummer for you guys that you don't see right at the bat.
Exactly.
that you the potential and how awesome it's going to be, because you are not aware of it, so probably your group is not aware of it. So this is the such unique opportunity for you guys to bring something unique to your events and bring it, make it memorable, because most of the time, yeah, you guys, you have not experienced it yet. That's why you don't see it. And then I think it's my challenge, my goal, and also my motivation to, in my promo kit, to make it clear right off the bat what it can do for them.
Mm-hmm. That's
so that's my angle. Instead of the shame, I just use it as a challenge to, to educate those people to get me where I want to be.
And you get to just purely prove your skill with three, and is it four after this CAX thing, or did you update your website already? Three Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah, I got three, and then indeed, like Kidabra Midyear, CAX, yes. Steve Axel, the convention where we met. I did this cup juggling. So one of my friends, he's a juggler. He is 76 years old at the moment. And about 45 years ago, he was performing the cup juggling in the Moulin Rouge. It's kind of, like all the jugglers juggle balls, clubs, rings. And in most juggling shops, they don't even carry juggling cups. But he said, pushed me, don't do what everybody else is doing. Just try to explore, go out of your comfort zone and pick up this prop. He said, I got so much success with it. When I was performing in Paris at this famous nightclub, he said, just go ahead, just try it. I will help you with it. So he was teaching me, he was helping me with that. And then just keep on practicing for a couple of years already. And then the weekend we met, I was, felt very strong, felt very ready. Mm-hmm. So then I went for this record attempt to attempt 12 cups. It's never been done before. And then I nailed it during Kidabra CAX. We got it filmed at all the people there. And now I submitted my case, the record attempt, to Guinness World Records in the UK. It takes a while. So in a couple of weeks' time, I will hear from their people at Guinness World Records if they accepted the record. And then if they did, I get my certificate.
That's awesome. What are the other three?
The other one is blindfolded juggling. So I did 6.5 minutes of juggling blindfolded. I did contact juggling, because after the blindfolded juggling, they put that record into the book. And then Guinness World Records, they had a book promotion in Amsterdam, and all the people from Guinness World Records were there, and they contacted me, you're one of the few Dutch people that have a Guinness World Record, and it's very visual, so would you mind coming down and do a demonstration of it to promote our book in Amsterdam? And when they were there, we went for two more world records. So one was behind the back juggling with balls, and contact juggling. It was great. It was it's a very good promotional tool. It's in 2011. Funny enough, I was working in China, and I like it. It was a great experience. It's such a different culture. So I asked the book, what would help you to promote my act to your clients so I can come back to China and work for you again? And he said, we really like awards also in the United States. It's very good to have these credentials. Mm-hmm. So because most people don't know about juggling ventriloquism. But they know Guinness World Records. So if you have something that they can relate it to, for them, it's easier to memorize how good you are. So he said that if you have a Guinness World Record, I have bragging rights to my clients. So it's most likely that they're going for it again. So if you can manage to practice hard to get a world record, then it will help me, and then help you to accomplish your goal to come back to this country.
That's awesome. Now you talk about being international. The thing I always love to ask our international guests is, you're performing in Las Vegas now. Where are you performing in Las Vegas?
Yesterday I did a show at D Casino, Left the Noon with Adam London.
Oh, cool.
And then next week I go to a magic convention, Winter Carnival of Wonders in, yes, Pigeon Forge. And then thereafter, it's just, across the country doing shows. So it's California Magic Dinner Theater in San Francisco. Going to do a show together with Jen Kramer, a magician, mm-hmm, here from Las Vegas. And then it's back to the cruise ships too. One in Mexico, one out of Florida, which is fantastic. And then it's going to be Moisture Festival. It's a comedy and variety festival in Seattle. It's a non-for-profit, so basically it's a lot of fun, and you meet a lot of other fellow variety acts, which is fantastic. And then I go back to Europe for a little bit, do some shows there, and then it's back to the U.S. again.
That's cool. That's the reason I have you put that out there, is because what's the main difference that you see or that you think between performing here in the States and performing back home in the Netherlands?
The Netherlands is it's a unique audience as well. They're very, very tough, German, Dutch, Norwegian. they're very reserved. So, but it's good, because that was kind of my training ground. If you can have them going and have them laughing, than all the other countries, it's easier. So that's a good thing. Like, it threw me in the hardest position right away, because that's where I was from. Here in the US, comedy is super important. Like in Northern Europe, or Europe in general, if you do a nice piece to music and the structure is nice and people really appreciate it, they go, okay, they look at the skill and they say, okay, this guy must have worked so hard just to accomplish that skill. Nice presentation, nice music, nice geography. It's a complete pack. It's fantastic. Here in the US, I feel like you have to work into music. It's not as common. Mm-hmm. As in Europe, so less people go into the direction, so it's also a little bit less developed in that way. But what's more developed is the comedy, connecting the skills with the comedy, and that's less developed in Europe. So yeah, for me it's like a perfect mix, because since 2004 I've been coming to the United States, so I've been exposed to the presentation of the tricks with the comedy, but also I know the European way of working, which more to the music. Mm-hmm. So now it's great. All the cruise ship work that I do, I try to mix it, because it's still American companies with a lot of American passengers. Mm-hmm. But also in Europe, it's a bunch of European passengers. So I just mix it. Do in between the routines, I do the comedy, and then I go into a bit that works to the music. So even if then I have an audience that doesn't understand English very well, there's enough for them to really enjoy just the visual spectacle. And then when I work for Americans, I can just top it up with comedy and brings more dimensions to the show, which I think it's good, because it's only me up on stage. So the more other elements, so cross disciplines, I've already mentioned, or the comedy, which also it's another discipline, because, you know, ventriloquism or juggling, it's skill.
Yes.
And then comedy is another skill. You get people that just do comedy. So it's and then nice lights, nice costume, like it's all different elements that bring more dimensions to the show. So there's more stuff going on, so more stuff to enjoy and more stuff to play with, to entertain the audience.
Awesome. I want to completely switch gears. There's no easy way to get into this. Two government-funded circus schools. I was reading about that and your involvement with that. That sounds awesome. Can you talk a little bit about your work with the circus schools in the Netherlands?
Yeah, so you have two circus schools in the Netherlands, and the students get a Bachelor of Arts degree when they graduate.
Oh, wow.
So it's a four-year educational program, and they learn in the first year, they learn everything, and then they specialize. So it was very funny, because I get a college degree myself. It's in mechanical engineering.
Yes.
So it's, And but there are not that many people that can teach juggling. It's, unique skill, and there's no normal route to become a juggler. So they were the juggling teacher that they had was very good. He used to be the president of the European Juggling Association and really cool guy. But he quit, because he got busy with his own performing schedule again. And so they called me, like, they said, oh, I have all those credentials. You have the experience of coming to the US and that exposure. And, you know, you already got these awards and stuff. So, like, we know you're as old as the students, but all the experience you have, like, it speaks for itself. Would you like to come down and become our juggling teacher? It's a part-time thing, so it's only like 8 hours per week.
Oh, cool.
That was, I said, yeah, fantastic. So I was like the head teacher of object manipulation and juggling at that circus school. And then the other circus school was having the same problem. And so they called me as well, like, you mind coming down? Like, we know you're busy with your own shows and, you know, doing this part-time job at the circus school in Rotterdam. What would you do? Mind like running a masterclass for us as well, a couple masterclasses to influence our students. So I did that as well, and they really liked it. And so I got a letter of recommendation from them, and which helps me a lot, like when I help for juggling conventions or, you know, other stuff as well, just to show the experience that I have, the credibility, and for all those projects. And I'm still in good standing with both. I can go back and practice at the schools and sometimes workshops, and it's fantastic.
That's really awesome. And you're involved in some other more broad organizations like Kadabra, which I think is really cool, because, and again, maybe I'm missing something here, but you do a lot of cruise ships and corporates, but not kid show specific stuff. So why is it important to be involved in organizations like Kadabra?
Actually, it's funny. I do quite a bit of kid shows, because but not the kid shows that most Kid Ever members are doing. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of cruise ships, but also you got Disney Cruise Line.
Yeah.
And on Disney Cruise Line, I need to do a family-friendly show.
Yeah.
And that's a half hour in duration. And then the same cruise, I also do a adult show. So for me, it's good, very good to be involved in Kid Ever, because Disney, the quality standards are super high, like the highest one in the industry, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So they expect the best. So I need to educate myself constantly to give Disney the quality that they're looking after. So that's why it's good to read the Kid Ever Journal and learn from the other kid show entertainers, tricks and the trades, and just to complement that to my cruise ship show. But there's still, yeah, on land I sometimes do as well. Like here in Las Vegas on Wednesday, I go to, it's a charity event, but I will do a show for a children's hospital here in Nevada. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Just I think it's good. Just learn, you know, also this cross-discipline thing. For example, when I was reading the book from Silly Billy, he said like interactions per minute. He said comedians judge the show by laughs per minute. He's a guy, for kids, it doesn't work that way. I go for interactions per minute. But I was thinking as well, like, you know, the more interesting moments. So now I converted for myself interesting moments per minute. And it could be a juggling trick, could be a joke, could be a movement, could be something. But the more interesting moments per minute you have, probably the much stronger your show is going to be. So just these nuggets of information from all these different angles that I throw at myself, it starts to make me think more and more and more, which helps me to make my show stronger.
Certainly does, certainly does. So that leads into the question, I two-tiered this time since you're a juggler. What do you want to see from jugglers out there listening and just performers in general as well? And you can give me two answers because I'm very curious to know what you want to hear from jugglers or see from jugglers.
I don't know. Like, it's a tough question because I think like I know what I want to see for myself, but I think everybody is, you know, taking care of their own business. Yeah. And everybody wants to get something else out of juggling or magic, ventriloquism. For some people, it's a hobby. And if you feel for yourself, it's a hobby, I'll say just go after it and have the most fun with it. And if it's professional, just, you know, serve your audience well. Just give them a show that they really like. And that's probably something I see lacking with a lot of performers and jugglers and, you know, every industry. They're not thinking what the audience wants. So that's probably why juggling, ventriloquism, and even magic to a certain extent has, you know, has a bad rap a little bit, like not the same appeal as singers or comedians, because we're not serving, you know, the audience. Like everybody's at their iPhone 3D, like all hip stuff, and then we come with some so old stuff that's like, really, you think you really can get away with it still?
Right.
It's like it's so like 30, 40, 50 years ago. Like some magic props that so look like trick boxes, and you go, you really think people are going to be amazed by that? Mm-hmm. It's just so out of fashion. And that's with juggling as well. With juggling, it's hard because, you know, to get the skill, you need to have it down so much so that you don't even have to think about what you do anymore. So you can give all the attention to the audience, look at them, smile at them, interact with them while you're doing your tricks. And that just takes years of experience. And it's tough because you need a working experience to develop it. But only you get this super good reaction and that respect from the audience when you master it. And then I think with juggling and magic, when people see one bad entertainer, they assume the entire art form is like that.
Yeah.
And if they hear a bad singer, they go, they've heard so many good songs and they enjoy listening to the radio. So they go, okay, there's just one bad example. We still enjoy listening to music. But with our art form, they don't think like that. Yeah. So probably if you're a professional, just, you know, work on it hard, work on that to because your own business will be going better. And also, your colleagues will benefit from it as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, I never thought of it like that. You see so many good singers that you see the bad singers as though they are trying to be the good singers and think they're better than they are. But if somebody sees a good magician, they go, oh, well, didn't know they could be that talented.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's always funny. I have to show it very often. They go, oh, I normally don't like juggling, but you were good. Yeah. And, all right. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Well, Niels Dunker, thank you so much for coming and being with us today. I've had a blast with you. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thank you again to Niels, wherever in this world you are. And for those of you who don't follow him, I'm serious. I don't know what corner of the globe this gentleman is in right now. He's just all over the place all of the time. Go follow him on Twitter. Friend him on Facebook if he'll accept you. I don't know. Follow him on Facebook and just take a look at his stuff because he's just incredible. I'm excited. I'm so glad we got to do this with you, Niels. Thank you again. Now, I want to take a moment to talk about something very near and dear to me. I normally don't like to ramble on about different things on this show, but I'm sure you guys have seen me post like a crazy person over the last couple of weeks because the sit stand, the thing that Jeffrey Goltz and I came up with, and Christopher Weed and Steve Axtell and Steve Petra helped develop, is now available at ShowtimeMagic.com, and it will be available at Axtell.com very, very soon. Very proud of this. Very excited about what this has become. For those of you unfamiliar with Christopher Weed, who will be making them and selling them, along with Axtell, who will be selling them, he is the gentleman, for those of you who don't know about the magic world, who does the Joe Loeffler tables, who has the rights to the name Joe Loeffler and can make the tables. Incredible. I have one. Incredible top-of-the-line quality. Just awesome. I'm so thrilled that this gentleman is making these tables because he worked his butt off to just really streamline the prototypes that Jeff and I had and had been using to make it something to bring to you guys to market, and I'm so excited. Now, what the sit stand is, for those of you who don't know, is I was tired of my puppet's feet dangling and the puppet would lurch forward. So it has a footrest so that you can put the puppet's feet down, and he's actually sitting like he would be sitting in a chair or on a stool. And the footrest itself is adjustable. So if you have a big puppet or a small puppet, the little footrest will be able to reach wherever you put it. And I think that's really exciting. Now, for those of you non-vents or for those of you who combine vent and magic like myself, the opportunities are limitless there as well. And I'm not just trying to be a salesman. I want to tell you a story. I am doing this Wednesday, today's Monday, this coming Wednesday, I'm doing the amateur night here at Pace University in the Schimmel Theater, which is where they film Inside the Actors Studio, so I'm really, really excited about that. If you hear this after then, it'll have already been done. But I'm not doing a puppet. I'm doing a magic trick. I'm not doing a vent routine. I'm doing a card trick. And the card trick has a few other props. Normally, I would work out of a small little attaché case, but when I got the sit stand, I thought, let me experiment here. And all I need to take with me is the stand, and that's all I need on stage. Before, I needed two stools, one to set stuff on, one to put the attaché case on. Now, all I need is the sit stand, and I'm ready to go. So it has applications because of that second level beyond just puppets. And I'm really, really excited about that. And I don't want you to think I'm running from its primary purpose. Oh, no, no. I developed that, designed it, and had my father build the first one I started using because I wanted my puppet to have feet firmly planted. So that's the primary use. But when I started using mine, I found so many cool opportunities for two levels. So I'm going to come off it now. Just ShowtimeMagic.com right now. Go place your order. And Axtell.com very, very soon. Axtell, I bought my first puppet from Steve many, many years ago. I've told him this story so many times. And just to be able to have the product on Axtell.com is just awesome. And as awesome to have it with Chris as well, who does incredible work for magicians. And everybody in this world loves him. So I'm very excited about it. So, going to stop rambling on for now, and that's it for us this week. Next week, Australia's Darren Carr makes his first appearance on the program, though it's not his first interview with me. I will explain next Monday. A reminder, you can find all you need to know about Ventriloquism Weekly by going to our website, ventriloquismweekly.com. Reach out by emailing ventriloquismweekly@gmail.com. And find our page on Facebook at facebook.com/talkfortwo. Tweet us and tweet about us at or hashtag talkfortwo, TALKFORTWO. And that's also how you spell the Facebook backslash. From New York, signing off for Ventriloquism Weekly, I'm Matt Bailey, reminding all you vents out there to keep talking for two.